this episode of Geo Talk, we discover how Scouts Australia are getting into geocaching. We get some tips on how you can become a first-to-find hunter. And we go geocaching on YouTube in New Zealand and Mongolia. All this and more on Geo Talk. Well, welcome to episode 94 of Geo Talk for December 2012. The year is almost finished. It's another year just about gone. The weather's warming up, which is great news, and the days are quite long. In fact, I even got to find a cache after work, and it was still daylight, so that was a good thing. For geocachers in New Zealand and Australia, enjoy the next few months of caching weather. Hopefully it's warm and not too hot in your neck of the woods. Well, the big news in the geocaching circles, although some of you may not have even realised it was around in the first place, was that Groundspeak announced that they're getting rid of the challenges. Now, this is not to be confused with challenge geocaches. This was the Groundspeak challenges, which they set up kind of as a bit of a sort of like portal for virtual and locationless caches, which they removed back, I think, in about 2005. They launched it last year with a bit of fanfare. It got ridiculed very early on by a very vocal group, and unfortunately, it never seemed to take off. It only had a few sort of dedicated followers. I had a go at it. I think I managed to get about a dozen. But a few weeks ago, they announced that they were pulling the pin on it, and not only that, they were removing all evidence of it, so you can't even find it anymore. So that's a bit disappointing, but on the upside, hopefully, that means that Groundspeak will now pour their resources into improving geocaching.com and also waymarking.com and possibly even Where I Go. That's something that sort of Brian Roth in our last episode alluded to. So hopefully we'll see those portals, those more established ones, develop a little bit further in the future. Another game that's been appearing here and there, a locationless-based game, is Google's Ingress. Now, only a few people have been lucky enough to have gotten the code that unlocks the game. There's very little information about it. There's a lot of cryptic stuff. If you really want to find out more about it, I suggest actually you follow Red Iguana from New Zealand. He's been actively playing it over the last few weeks. A few people have been trying to get a code for it, and they'll hopefully give us some more information about it. But there's a clip on YouTube that you can check out. Doesn't really shed any light on it for me, but check it out. I'll give you a link in the show notes at geotalkpodcast.com. Now, one of the great things about YouTube is that you can travel vicariously around the planet geocaching, and there's two great YouTube videos that have just gone up in the last few weeks. The first one is from Andrew, also known as Skydog, a geocacher from around here in Sydney. He has the Pro Caching website. He's just come back from a trip to Mongolia, and he goes hunting for a geocache out there. So I'll give you a link in the show notes to check that out. It's well worth watching. And another one is from Money Dork and Red Iguana over in New Zealand, celebrating Money Dork's 15,000th geocache find. They decide to head up into the air and up onto the mountains around Queenstown to find some caches around there. So those two videos, well worth checking out. Once again, I'll give you a link in the show notes at geotalkpodcast.com. Now, if you're into path tags, and there's quite a few people into path tags, I saw a lot of them at the last mega and at the last event as well, you should take note of an email I received from Carews, who helps coordinate a non-profit group called AussiePathTagClub.com. So all you need to do is go to their website, AussiePathTagClub.com, and you can become a member of that club and participate in monthly draws of designs and so forth for path tags, and it's a bit of a co-op sort of group. So I won't explain it too much more. Check it out, AussiePathTagClub.com. And another thing you can get involved in or collect are geocaching trading cards. And I got an email from Shane Holmes, also known as Geo Lobo, over in the US. He's already put together one set in the past called the Geocaching Terminology A to Z, or actually, no, sorry, I think it's the Geocaching History card set, and he's doing the Geocaching Terminology this time around. Anyway, he's been looking for funds to help fund or looking for money to help fund this project through Kickstarter. And just checking it this morning, it looks like he's already passed his target of $800 to put these together. But you can still contribute to it, because obviously now the cards are going to go ahead. And if you want to participate, you can do it from as low as a dollar just for a thank you. Or you can put in $5 to receive at least two cards, $10 for three cards, right up to $300 to be a sponsor, which means you get a lot of recognition, plus you get 20 of these trading cards as well. Check that out. You can check out the project. It's at geocachingtradingcards.com, and it looks well worth a look. I might even chip in a few bucks and send it my way. Thanks, Shane, for that email. Might do now is just take a call from a local geocacher, one in Sydney by the name of James, or aka Zell Goriath, who just recently travelled over to New Zealand.
G'day GeoTalk listeners, this is Zell Goriath coming from New Zealand on the South Island. Now, last episode we heard Spindock on his New Zealand mega visit decided to do the old school challenge for the South Island, and he tipped us off that it would be a good fun thing to do. So currently Jarmin and I are now halfway through. I'm standing at our fifth find, which is Table Hill in Otago, and probably the hardest cache of the ones we've had to do so far. We've come down the west coast, started at Christchurch, got the old one there, then across and down through the virtuals at Invercargill, and now we'll finish up with the Dunedin ones today and tomorrow, getting the final on our last day. Do believe there is a find from the 23rd of the 10th, 2012, just visiting from Australia for the New Zealand mega event. We also wanted to find the 10 oldest caches on the South Island. Not many more to find now. I believe that's probably a Spindock entry, except someone forgot to sign their name. So, unless he got this one on a previous visit, I don't know if there's any proof that he was actually ever here. Handwriting looks oddly familiar, though there were a few Aussie teams over. Xiaoyi sat this one out, unfortunately. I don't know if she qualifies for the final anymore, because she's back down in the car hiding from the rain. I've been rather lucky. It's just broken out in some light drizzle instead of the pouring that we've had the past few days, and we're greatly enjoying ourselves. Anyway, we've got five more to go in the final. We'll hopefully give you an update in a day or two's time when this is done. Zell Goriath in New Zealand, over and out.
Well, thanks for that, James, for that bit of audio, sending that in. We look forward to hearing back from you a little bit later to see how you go in finding those 10 old school caches on the South Island of New Zealand. And thank you also for reminding me that I forgot to sign my log on one of them. I'll have to work out which one it was. Find out from you anyway. Now, talking about logs and names and geocaches, one thing I've noticed in the last month or two is, as my role in geocaching New South Wales, I seem to be receiving a number of phone calls lately about geocaches that have been hidden in areas that people don't want them. Now, quite often they're on public land, but they're very close to private land. And the reason why I seem to be getting the phone calls is because people are failing to put in their contact details in the geocache. Now, I know in the early days it was something that a lot of cache hiders didn't do just to keep their identity secret. But these days, when you've got geocaches being hidden in urban environments and being found by muggles quite easily, it's probably not a bad thing to include at least your name and an email address, if not a phone number, so that if someone finds it, you'll at least get your geocache back. So, I mean, look at it this way. At least all that money and time that you put into putting your geocache together, at least it won't be wasted by someone who doesn't know who owns it and then just throwing it in the bin. So just a little tip, put your name and your contact details in that geocache. Now it's time to stay over in New Zealand and catch up with the latest news over there from Radio Nut 50.
Yeah, hi there to all the geocachers from Radio Nut 50 here with some geocaching comments from New Zealand. Well, we're now getting really close to Christmas. I wonder what everyone's expecting from Santa this year, a new GPS receiver maybe, or some other high-tech caching devices. It'd be really interesting for people to send in comments later of what they maybe did get and whether it helped them out very much. We've just had our very first New Zealand mega event. What a great time we had down in Dunedin. Thanks go out to the small group of keen members of the New Zealand GPS Society who put in that hard work and made it go so well. Linda and I enjoyed our little task running the travel bug exchange table. It was somewhat amusing, though, that when we arrived in Dunedin from Hamilton, I offered to help out a little bit more if I was needed. And I was found a task that suited my talents. I went on the toilet cleaning roster. It's all good fun, of course. I did enjoy the chance we had to meet so many cachers who listened to this podcast. It's great to receive such positive feedback at times. Darren, we enjoyed your last Geo Talk with your week-long report of travels in New Zealand. You mentioned, though, of receiving a charge from the law for parking your car on the wrong side of the road when searching for a cache. Could be seen as a timely reminder to those in our hobby. We all know that's against the law, but yours is the very first time I've ever heard of anyone actually getting fined for it. Must be a special feature for tourists in this country. Well done. I see a group of Auckland geocachers have got together and published their intention to organise a mega event in Auckland next year on the same Labour weekend, this time the 26th to the 28th of October 2013. They've published a web page looking for expressions of interest. It's on nzmega.com. Have a look there. There's been a thread on the New Zealand GPS.org.nz forums recently on first to find hunting. While it covered a number of matters, I really enjoyed one entry, a list of how to get first to finds from my friend Richard, who caches under the name Zorgon. I thought I'd read some of it here. In the interest of increasing FTF competition, Zorgon's FTF tips are, number one, unless you pay for a GC.com premium membership, forget about any chance of getting an FTF, unless you're very lucky. The premium membership allows you to set up the notifications feature that'll send you an email when a new cache is published. Everyone using the notification feature receives it at the same time, so at this point, you're still on an even playing field. Number two, you used to have to use this email and generate a text alert on your phone, but now that everyone has smartphones, you receive the email directly on your phone. Number three, you won't be FTF unless you have your phone with you and turned on. You also won't be FTF if you're worried about that it is 11 p.m. and the rain is bucketing down. Number four, if you're not out the door and in the car within 30 to 60 seconds of receiving the notification, you're doing something very wrong. The only things you should be checking are the cache type, terrain rating, distance from home. This should be done on the phone, not by logging into gc.com on the computer. Obviously, if it's a puzzle cache, you need to stop and solve the puzzle before leaving home, unless you're caching with a friend who's clever enough to solve it on the way. Number five, common mistakes at this point. Downloading the cache info into your GPS. Wasting time telling someone where you're going. Trying to find a pen, a GPS, a raincoat or a torch that should really already be in the car. Getting changed into appropriate caching clothes or thinking that jandals, maybe thongs to some, might be inappropriate. You're really fine however you are. Number six, either manually enter the cache coordinates into the GPS as you're driving or before you set off if you insist. Also, note the chances of a speeding ticket are very slim, up to 10 kilometres an hour over that muggle speed limit. Number seven, on arrival close to GZ, remember that double yellow lines mean that only geocaches are allowed to park, so make the most of this rule. If you've got a four-wheel drive, you might find that bumping over a few curbs can get you right to GZ. Number eight, while walking towards GZ, you read the hint, at GZ, start hunting, but if not found in a minute or so, read the other info on the cache page and see if there's anything else useful there. That's when you tend to find, don't attempt this cache at night, and that type of comment, oops. If you don't follow these tips to the letter, you shouldn't be wondering why other people get most of the FTFs in your area. A fair bit of that was tongue-in-cheek, but I really enjoyed it. Well, to round off the year 2012, Linda and I are off to Oz for a real holiday this time, not tagged onto a business trip. We're heading for Adelaide on Christmas Eve and staying for a week, and then taking a train ride to Melbourne, a few days there, and off to Geelong, and then home again. As a highlight of our trip, the SA Parrothead and the Pirate Parrots team have kindly organised a fun barbecue event in Adelaide on Saturday the 29th of December. It's listed at lunchtime on the Saturday and it's called Nearly a New Zealand New Year. We really look forward to anyone who has the chance to come down and meet us on the day. So with that, it's time to go and wish everyone a great Christmas and an enjoyable New Year, and of course, lots of great geocaching experiences. Thanks, Darren. It's back to you.
Well, thanks for that, Alan. And it turns out that our paths almost cross. I'm heading down to Melbourne for this Christmas New Year break, and I'm leaving exactly the same day that Alan's arriving over from Adelaide. But I'm sure you'll have a good time, particularly in the hands of those local South Australians who are geocaching mad. And also thanks for those FTF tips and the reminder that all of us should obey the law when we go out geocaching. I think if anything, sometimes we get a little bit too excited when we're looking for a geocache or an earth cache, as was the case in mine. And thanks for the head up on the mega events. In fact, it's the trivia question for this particular episode I thought I might throw in. How many mega events are planned for Australia and New Zealand, and when are they planned for? So how many mega events are planned in Australia and New Zealand, and when are they planned for? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Well, if you're into geocaching, chances are that you might have been involved in some other outdoor activities, and one of those could be scouting. And we're joined on the podcast in this episode by someone who combines the two together, Alex, also known as AL3XM. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Darren. Thanks for having me.
Now, Alex, first of all, tell us a little bit about who you are and what your role is with Scouts Australia.
I'm a scout leader, but more specifically, I'm the team leader for the geocaching project that Scouts Australia has underway.
Alex, how long have you been geocaching for?
I've been geocaching since 2010, mm-hmm. And I can't even really remember how I got into it. I just stumbled across it one day and thought, oh yeah, that looks pretty good, and I saw it as having a large synergy with what I do in the scout movement. Gets you outside, gets you exploring new places, gets you using, you know, GPSs and whatnot, which is all stuff we do in scouts. And I, you know, have integrated it into the scouting program, mm-hmm. where I can with my local group since then, and now we're taking it, you know, national. Mm-hmm.
Where did you come up with the idea for this geocaching competition within, you know, Scouts Australia?
Yeah, sure. We actually started talking about it at a national level first as just producing a geo coin or a geocaching cloth badge that people could just drop in a geocache as like a swappable or a collectible. Mm-hmm. But from that, we just kind of evolved it and thought, well, hang on a minute. If we're doing this, why don't we go the whole hog and get our members to really participate in what we think is a really good activity? And it just evolved and became what it is now, which is a competition for all of our members.
Now, the competition starts in March. Mm-hmm. Is it going to involve geocaches that are already out there, or are you setting up specific geocaches? What are the rules that those who want to participate have to follow?
The rules are pretty simple. We only really count geocaches that are listed on geocaching.com, because we've actually got a small partnership with them, whereby which they're going to be helping us out in calculating how many people have found during the period of the competition, and it just makes it easier for us to kind of keep track.
So scouts will be going out looking for these caches during that six-month period from March to September next year. Mm. I mean, are mums and dads encouraged to help, or is the emphasis really on the scouts themselves, you know, doing it solo?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Certainly mums and dads can help, and we would expect probably them to be helping some of our younger members, some of our Joey-aged or Cub-aged members, where they're perhaps less I suppose, independent or independently mobile than, say, our older members in the Venturer section or the Rover section, which ranges between 14 years of age to 26 years of age. Mm-hmm. So certainly we'd expect parents to be involved with their younger members, but they themselves can't participate in the competition officially without actually being a member of the association.
And given that you've got such a wide spread of ages within the Scout movement, I mean, will there be different age categories? Because you were saying that there'll be rewards for those that find the most. Obviously, say a 10-year-old Scout is not going to find as many as, say, a Venturer. So will it be divided amongst the different age categories?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually considered that when we were first designing the competition, and you know, we recognised that a Joey-aged member or a cub, you know, 10 years old, something like that, won't be able to find as many as a Venturer. And what we decided to do was create divisions within the competition, and the divisions basically match the various sections we have in the Scout movement, which is Joeys, Cubs, Scouts, Venturers, Rovers, and then there's a larger kind of catch-all division for adult leaders. The reason we did that is to accommodate for the fact that not everyone has the same kind of ability to get out and find cages. The other thing we did is we also recognised that depending on where you live, there'll be more or less caches. So in South Australia, where there is an awful lot of geocaches, it'll be really easy to find geocaches. Whereas in perhaps somewhere else in Australia where there may not be a large density of geocaches, that would actually put people at a disadvantage simply because that's where they live. So the divisions are also based on the state in which you live in as well. So there's basically a winner in each state and for each section, so age bracket as well.
And will every scout who participates receive some sort of recognition?
We actually have what we call a blanket badge, which is a badge that can be sewn onto a camp blanket. And people are encouraged to purchase those, and often groups do purchase them for their members, but it is an optional little badge that they can get, and it is not something that we'll be supplying by default, but certainly we expect a lot of people to be purchasing those. And in fact, based on initiatives we've done in the past, there'll be many thousands purchased.
And are you hoping that you'll be able to attract geocachers who are in that sort of age category into the scouting movement?
Yeah, well, that's certainly one of the tangential benefits of the initiative, is that through the various things that we're doing, by creating things like GeoCoins, which we will be doing, we'll have Scouts Australia branded GeoCoins, Scouts Australia branded path tags, and branded geocaching containers, we hope to increase the awareness of scouting via that. And as a result, maybe people out there who are participating in geocaching might go, hey, these guys are into it, might check out what they're doing, and it might translate into more scouts in the future.
Mm-hmm. And if families or boys and girls who are listening to this want to get involved, how can they find out more information about this Scouts geocaching competition?
Okay, well, we've set up a website, which is at geocaching.scouts.com.au. It's got a ton of information about the competition. It's probably got everything you need to know. And for anyone who's a member, there is a form there that you can use to register for the competition as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, on behalf of all the listeners, all the best with the competition. We look forward to following it next year, and maybe we might speak to you in about 12 months' time and find out who the winners are.
Thanks, Darren.
Cheers. let's head around the country and have a look at some of the events that are occurring around Australia in the new year, in January 2013. First one is a New Year Cache being event being held on the 1st of January over in Adelaide in South Australia. There's the Special Goths Farewell Dinner on the 2nd of January up in the Adelaide Hills. Hunting, or haunting, I should say, for wimps over in Tasmania on the 3rd of January. On the 5th of January is the 5th Annual Hills Geocaching Event up in the northwest of Sydney. On the 6th of January, Buried Treasure 2, Skull's Revenge, down on the Ballerine Peninsula in Victoria. On the 12th of January is the Far South Coast Meet and Greet. That's being held in New South Wales. On the 13th of January, a few events. There's the Oz Mega Queensland 2015 Planning Day number 1. It's being held in Queensland. There's the Let's See To Little Para Trail number 4. That's being held in South Australia. Team Casho's Going Golfing. That's being held in Penrith over in New South Wales. The Big Little event, which we've featured a few episodes ago, that's being held down at Nelson in Victoria on the 18th of January. On the 19th of January is a trip up the Hawkesbury by boat, which I should point out is a 5-5 event cache. You've got to travel by boat to get to that particular one. That's up on the Hawkesbury River north of Sydney. On the 20th of January, there's the Summer of 2013 Bribey Views being held over in southeast Queensland. Also on the 20th of January, there's the York Peninsula Caches Get Together being held in Kadena. On the 21st of January, it's a dirty job, but someone has to do it. CETO, that's being held down in Nelson, just near the Big Little event down in Victoria. On the 25th of January, the Bush Mechanics Weekend, that's being held up on the Murray River, just northeast of Adelaide. And on the 26th of January, on Australia Day, the 2012 Tasmanian Cache of the Year Awards being held in the middle of Tassie, smack in the middle there. Well, that's all the events that are occurring around the country. Hopefully you'll be able to get to one of them. If not these ones, another one in the future. Well, let's have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag for this episode. First of all, got an email from Toriaz up in the Blue Mountains in New South Wales. Writes in to say that, hi Darren, we took a geocaching trip down to Nowra and Kiama at the weekend, and while there got to do my first Where I Go cache called Talking to the Ghosts. I couldn't do them on my GPS, but found a free app for the iPhone called Where I Go. My biker buddy had the cartridge downloaded in his Oregon, so we used the opportunity to check how the app works compared to the GPS cartridge. All went smoothly, and it took a little bit of experimenting with the menus at first to figure out what I needed to do, but it didn't take too long to get the hang of it. We found no difference in performance between the devices. I didn't know what device option to select, because iPhone isn't on the list for downloading cartridges, so I went with the Colorado option at the top of the list, then read later that I probably should have picked the Pocket PC option, but it didn't seem to affect it, as it worked smoothly. Had great fun doing the Where I Go, and looking forward to doing others around Sydney now that I know how to do it with the phone. Maybe others who avoided this type of cache because they didn't know they had the right GPS will be able to use their smartphone and get out to do a few as well. And that's Victoria Torres up in the Blue Mountains. Thanks very much for that. Well, let's head across to New Zealand and catch up with someone we spoke to at the Mega event, and that's Jamie N from over in Oamaru in New Zealand, who's gone looking for a letterbox hybrid.
Hi, Darren. This is Jamie N from Oamaru in NZ. Recently went to the NZ Mega in Dunedin, an excellent event, and while we were down there, we went and found a really great cache by Daywalk called Great Scenic View at Caversham Tunnel, a letterbox hybrid cache. The number is GC3W42A. Anyway, here's a bit of audio I recorded while we were doing that. Hope you like it. Hi, Darren and GeoTalk podcast listeners. This is Jamie N, Tankboy5 and Marcelo1. Just left a cache in Dunedin called IV Puzzled, and we're heading now for the Great Scenic View at Caversham Tunnel cache, the letterbox hybrid. So we'll let you know how we get on with that one. Talk to you later. Hi, Darren. This is Jamie N again. We just got to the waypoint that leads you to the start, letterbox hybrid, and it's a popular place today. There's about another 4 or 5 caches here today, all at the Mega, so we'll let you know when we get to GZ, see if we find the cache. We've just to the waypoint and worked out the clue, and we met up with a few other caches. Most of them headed off, but we're just walking back to our car now with Crystal Fairy, Andrew, the other half of my group is Heidi and Microman, or Aiden,
and they're in the camper van because it was raining. But he's absolutely train fanatic. We're going to take the railway gorge on Monday, and I was hoping he'd be able to see this, but they didn't want to get out in the cold rain today.
Okay, cheers. Well, we're off to hopefully find the cache now. Get back to you later. Hi, Darren. We've just got to the cache and cache in hand, so that's really good. It's a nice size. It's got lots of good things in it. And, another successful smiley and really great cache. You should definitely do it if you're down this way. Cheers, listeners. Happy caching.
Well, thanks for that, Jamie and family. It was great catching up with you guys when I was in New Zealand, and well done on finding that letterbox hybrid cache. Well, let's catch up with Zalgariath, and let's see how Zalgariath and Zhao Min went finding that old school challenge over in New Zealand.
G'day everyone again, Zalgariath back, but no longer in New Zealand. Recording this from back home in sunny Sydney, where it's much warmer than it was over there, with some sad news. Unfortunately, just a few minutes after making that previous recording and getting back to the car, we turned the key and nothing happened. Short story is we had a flat battery, needed to get it all sorted up, and lost 6 hours of our day in Dunedin, where we were supposed to be getting the back end of those 10 South Island caches for the old school challenge. Tried, failed, got three more, I think. So there's only a couple to go, but we just ran out of daylight, so it's going to have to wait for another chance. Good news is I hear there may be a similar experience coming out soon in Australia, and should be pretty on top of getting that one fairly quickly, I would hope. Oh well, kind of everything your own way. It was still a great holiday. Got some really good finds. Talk to you all soon. Zalgariath and Zhao Min out.
Oh dear. Well, James, I don't know what to say. 6 hours is a long time to wait for the car. Obviously, you had to move north pretty soon afterwards. But look, hey, you got the harder ones done, the ones down in Invercargill, the ones that are a bit further away, even though they're virtuals. Looks like we've got a race now to see if we can be the first to finish off that old school challenge. And as James mentioned there is a new challenge cache that's been set up in New South Wales called the New South Wales Old School Challenge. It's not quite as difficult as the New Zealand one. You've got a longer list to choose from. You still have to find 10 old caches, but it's from the years 2000 and 2001 that have been hidden in New South Wales. So if you found 10 caches that were hidden in those years and they were still active at the date that the cache was hidden, which I think was somewhere at time in early December, you can log a find on that geocache, which is not a very difficult one and very close to where the original geocache in Australia was hidden, the Lane Cove geocache GC3. So I'll give you a link in the show notes at geotalkpodcast.com. Don't forget, if you want to contribute to the show, it's fairly easy. Just drop an email to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call it in on 02-800-50-436. That's 02-800-50-436. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk, but before we go, we better give you the answer to the trivia question, and that question was, what mega events have been planned for Australia and New Zealand in the not-too-distant future? Well, the next mega event that's been planned is in Auckland, and that's going to be over in New Zealand on the North Island there, and that's being planned for the long weekend in New Zealand. That's in mid-October 2013. After that is the South Australia mega event, which is going to be held in Murray Bridge, if you haven't already checked that out. That's going to be in April 2014. And then in 2015, there's the Canberra mega event, which is being planned for January of that year, and the Queensland mega event, which will be held in Easter of 2015. So mega events are starting to pop up all over the place. You've got four to choose from there. Who knows, you may even appear at all four of them. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. Before I go, a Merry Christmas to all the GeoTalk listeners, and I wish you all a Happy New Year, and I hope Santa brings you lots of GPS goodies, and I'll catch up with you in 2013. Until then, safe geocaching.